Good evening, I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutin.
Welcome to Consider This. Tonight on the show, I'm delighted to welcome Wan Sai Ful Wan Jun, Chairman of PTPTN, the National Higher Education Fund Corporation. He's also the Supreme Council Member for Bersatu. Welcome to the show, Wan. Now, in the next half an hour, we've got a lot of ground to cover, everything from the stability of Bersatu within the Pakatan Harapan Coalition, the leadership of Dr. Mahathir, as well as public sentiments towards the current government. But I'd like to begin with PTPTN, if I may. Now, it was set up to help students to pay for their tertiary education, but today it's sitting on about 40 billion ringgit, a pile of debt of 40 billion ringgit. That is among the highest with a government guarantee after 1MDB. So I want to talk to you a little bit about updates of a government cabinet promise that they will be deciding on a new repayment mechanism for PTPTN before the end of the year. Do you have any updates for us, Wan?
Well, you know, depending on how you look at it, some people say that our problem is actually bigger than 1MDB. But to be honest, this year has been quite a good year for us in terms of achieving our targets and making sure that you know, we change the direction a little bit. You see, let's look into history a little bit and then we move on to the current situation. The reality is, when PTPTN was set up, it was set up with a very good intention, which is to help people who do not have other sources of income to pay for their studies in universities, higher education institutions. But the model was wrong. Right from the beginning, the model was wrong. Because what happened was, the model was set up in such a way that PTPTN had to borrow from financial markets at higher rates and lend to students at lower rates. So at the moment, you know, the figure that we like to use, this is on average, we borrow at 5%, we lend at 1%. Mm. So immediately, there's a, you know, 4% missing.
Yep.
And that debt has been piling up year on year. And then the policy as well is one in which anybody who applies will get the loan. And this creates a problem. This creates, you know, graduates who end up with quite a big student debt when they graduated from their studies. We're trying to fix that. It's taking you know, quite some time for us to come to the conclusion that the current model is simply not sustainable. When I got into the office in June last year, you know, I asked the team to do some basic studies on the model and the operations of PTPTN. And I told the minister that the model is just not sustainable. The model is quite ridiculous, to be honest. You know, you want to sustain yourself, but you borrow at higher rate, lend at lower rate.
And can you name the person responsible for creating this little monster?
Well, but it evolved over time, so let's not go into that. I really do not like to go into this habit of blaming the past, but we just need to appreciate the history. So when I got into office, what I did was made a proposal, this was back in September, October, saying that we need to revamp the whole model of higher education financing. But the focus at government level at that time was to fix the repayment mechanism. So the instruction that I got was, yes, we know that the model is problematic, but let's focus on making repayment mechanism easier for the borrowers. You know, find a better rate for them to pay and so on. We tried to do that, but the government looked at the proposal and the government said, this is still not quite right. So we went on another round of study. But, you know, to cut long story short, after 18 months, we went back to the stage of my initial proposal.
Just to revamp the whole model.
To revamp the whole model. And the minister made this announcement. I'm really pleased with this announcement that the whole model will be reviewed and revamped. We have submitted our proposal and how that can be done. In summary, I'm going to make this very short because I know I'm taking time here.
No. I want to hear the explanation. How are you looking to revamp this model?
In summary, we need to acknowledge that PTPTN is playing three different roles at the moment. One is savings. So one is managing the saving from depositors, our SSPN account. Mm-hmm. Then we issue loans for students who want to continue to go into higher education. And we also manage the repayment of previous loans. So among the three, the saving part is profitable. We issue dividends, our dividends are quite competitive, the incentive we have are really good. The future loans is really not problematic. You know, if we can revamp the future loan structure, I think we can make it better for the borrowers. But the bit that's problematic is a third part, which is managing repayment. Mm-hmm. And that part, I think, is slowing down the reform of the two other segments. I think we need to acknowledge that there exist three different elements.
Okay.
And if only we can make sure that PTPTN give a bit more focus in different ways to these three. I can't go into the details yet because this is for the minister to consider and to announce. But basically, I'm quite happy that we got to where we are now.
I mean, when you took on this position, I mean, this was a political hot potato. I mean, and that's kind of understating the case, because it's about how people experience government, either a sense of entitlement or a sense of that they're being deprived, they're being taxed, basically, and something is lost in their monthly income from the repayments. I mean, how have you tackled the communications of this? Because if this new model means that people are actually going to have to put out more money, they're not going to be necessarily happy unless they see a broader benefit to themselves, because this is, you have a kind of a broad perspective, a macro perspective, they have that individual perspective. How do you bridge that gap?
Well, but we need to communicate better, and this is also what we're trying to do. At PTPTN, I think not many people will know about the saving scheme that we have, because over the last 20 years that we have existed, the emphasis has always been on the lending part. The name is Perbadanan Tabung Pendidikan Tinggi Nasional. But whenever people see the name, even though the word tabung is there, they always think about loan, pinjaman. And the focus has always been on the lending part. And I think this is wrong. We have been working very hard this year to change that perception, so that people remember PTPTN as a savings organization with lending facility. And I think that requires a cultural shift, that requires a perception shift in the public. It will take time, but we have started that journey. Communication is the key. You mentioned this in your question just now. And I think this is a weakness of government as a whole. Government, as well as Pakatan Harapan, is a ruling coalition. I'm not going to apologize for saying this, but it has been a miserable year in terms of communication. take myself, for example. In the manifesto, we promised several things. We promised that for borrowers, we're going to encourage employers to help pay for their loans. We have done that. We have created tax incentive for employers to join in and help pay for the borrowers for the loans. We have also said in the manifesto that we will reward students who perform well. We have done that. We changed the loans into scholarships. We have also promised that we're going to abolish the travel blacklist. Uh-huh. We have done that. Uh-huh. But the thing that people focus on, including from within Pakatan Harapan, is a fourth item which we're working on, which is to tangguhkan,
defer the payment
for those earning below 4,000 ringgit.
Correct.
We have financial restrictions on that one. Financial constraints on that one, and we're working on it.
You're absolutely right. That is actually almost the only thing people fixate on, both media, the public, and politicians, opposition and otherwise, when it comes to PTPTN's performance. Are you frustrated about that?
Completely, because I go everywhere saying that 75% of the promises have been delivered. One is in the pipeline, and now we have a bigger review that will benefit the country as a whole in the future on higher education financing. But we ourselves keep harping on and on and on about this one thing as if we're not doing anything. And so this is the weakness of government as a whole and Pakatan Harapan. Information and communication channels are disastrous, I think. They really need to fix it. One agency can try the best that they can do. We can try our best. But if the whole government machinery is not moving in the same direction, that will not happen.
Okay, we're going to come back and talk about this miserable year of communication for Pakatan Harapan right here on Consider This. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris, with me Sharad Kutan. We're chatting tonight to Wan Saiful Wan Jan, who is a Supreme Member Council Supreme Council member for Bersatu. And I want to talk about the perception. We touched just before the break about communication. And with that comes public perception of the Pakatan Harapan Coalition and Bersatu specifically. Now, in the performance of Bersatu in the previous by-elections have not been stellar, and I'm putting that generously. How, as a Supreme Council member, how have you been communicating to your team about what needs to be done within this small party within a wider coalition?
Yeah, if you're referring to Tanjung Piai, again, you know, that was a big defeat for us, and it's a wake-up call, but it's not the first wake-up call. I don't know how many wake-ups we need. The reality
is like you're pressing snooze all the time.
So we have to wake up now, you know, because the reality is people on the ground are tired of all the internal bickerings that they see. They're tired of, you know, trying to guess which direction is this government heading to. We need to have a clear narrative. Internally, you know, people like me can make a proposal, but higher ups, those who are implementing those decisions, they need to be consistent in the message and in the direction. Otherwise, Tanjung Piai will repeat itself again. You know, take for example the swing that took place in Tanjung Piai, especially among the Chinese voters. I think the reason for this is we fought the election, the general election, under a banner of unity, promising a new Malaysia for everyone. But the definition of that new Malaysia has never been agreed or even discussed in a rational way. You know, the ethnic Chinese feels in one way, let me be frank, I think the ethnic Chinese felt let down by DAP for not championing the cause. And they say that DAP is being subservient, has been made subservient to Bersatu. But the ethnic Malays are saying that Bersatu have been forced to be subservient to DAP. So which one is the truth here? Who is subservient to whom? And this kind of sentiment on the ground is happening because we don't have that bigger narrative. You know, we do need a Malaysia where the dominant ethnic group is secure in their position, but others feel appreciated as well. At the moment, this hyping up of the ethnic sentiment is not helping. Mm. And I think that showed in Tanjung Piai.
Well, speaking of which, all right, the Congress Maruah Melayu, you know, here, you know, you had individuals from, you know, the kind of intellectual elite of the Malay community. You had the universities involved. You had much of the Bersatu leadership there. I mean, it seemed to be a kind of serious shift from the kind of rhetoric of a United Malaysia to go that way. I mean, Dr. Mahathir's speech notwithstanding, why does the party feel the need to do that when it seemed to send such confusing messages to a Malaysia, you know, and Malaysians who want a move away from the kind of ethnic model that we had before?
Well, I was there, the Congress as well. And I think...
Why were you there?
Well, I think Congress needed to be held. You see, you need to understand the sentiment among the Malays. And among the Malays, we feel that there is a shift. You know, what used to be a dominant ethnic group in this country is losing political power after having lost economic power. So this insecurity is definitely not healthy. Mm. We need the Malays to feel more confident in themselves. The Malays need to feel more secure in their positions. And events like that, I think it's not really a big event until somebody else hype it up as a big issue. The reality is, every single ethnic group at the moment is speaking up for themselves. So just as the Chinese has the right to demand for their rights, the Indians have the right to demand for their rights, the Malays have the right to demand for their rights as well.
Yeah, okay, so let's just pick up on one of those elements you talked about, which is the idea of losing power. I mean, which is an extraordinary assertion, because UMNO lost power. That's true, but did the Malay community is represented through PKR, AMANA.
We're not talking about facts, we're talking about perception. So this is where the two comes into play. One is communication. Another one is how the public behaves and reacts to that perception. So this is why, you know, to me, the key to this is communication. If we do not have, or if we do not develop this narrative, this national narrative of what New Malaysia is, then we will not be able to communicate properly to the grassroots level.
Okay, tell us a little. Yeah, so tell us what is it that you think your party or those concerned about representing the community need to play to? Are they going to be playing to the old UMNO strategy of entitlements, privileges, you get more than other communities because you are Malay and so on and so forth? I mean, is that the playbook, or are you returning to the old playbook, or are you returning to a different playbook, but with the same objective, securing the sense that the community is not going to be left behind?
Well, the Malay community in reality is not being left behind, just like the Chinese is not being left behind, the Indians, nobody is being left behind. The country is trying to cater to the needs of everyone. But in terms of perception, in terms of public perception especially, I think we need to make sure that the Malays feel secure. The dominant ethnic group or the majority ethnic group, if they are not secure, then the whole country will be destabilized.
True, but okay, let's just quickly.
Yeah, go for it, yeah.
Dr. Mahathir said, and he's repeated often, that he wants to keep everybody equally unhappy. Now, is that a winning strategy?
Well, no, he's stating the fact that everyone is equally unhappy. He's not saying that he wants to make everybody unhappy. But let me come back to your question just now. I think at the moment, the emphasis is a bit too much on institutional reform.
Too much on institutional reform?
Let me explain. Oh. I agree completely on the need to reform the institutions that we have. That one, it goes without saying. Mm. You know, this is what I've been saying all the while as well. But institutional reform will only remain permanent if the public supports it. At the moment, public support and public confidence in the government is shaking a little bit. And the reason is not institution, the reason is economic. So I think we need to focus on growing the economy, sharing the prosperity properly, and making sure that everybody feels that they have a share in the economic pie. Once you get the, you see, institutional reform is a luxury of the middle class, usually. You know, the working class are not thinking about institutional reform. They are thinking about, what can they eat and drink, and you know, what do they have on table on a daily basis. So I think we need to fulfill the economic requirement first, and then you will get full support on the institutional reform. At the moment, what the public is saying, you're reforming this, you're reforming that at the institutional level, but what do we get out of it?
Is this a kind of understanding, an assessment, a diagnosis that is shared by the, you know, higher leadership of the country? Are they aware of this perception, as you just stated?
I'm not going to speak on their behalf. So I think today I'm speaking as from my point of view.
But in your communication with them, surely, I'm just wondering, are they aware of the problem?
I think so many people have raised the questions to them. People are saying that, the removal of subsidies happening too fast, the changes in how assistance are given to the grassroots members of the communities are restructured too fast. So things are moving a little bit too fast to the public's liking. Take PTPTN, for example. What's the real issue? The crux of the problem is people are not paying, right? If I were to do institutional reform, then I would go all out to sue everybody who hasn't paid.
Right.
That would be the simplistic institutional level response. But the reality is, they're not paying for other reasons.
They're not earning enough. It's too high cost of living.
And of course, political rhetorics as well. So populism is, we have trained our people, we have trained the public to believe in populist ideas. So now, pay the price. But we need to study and identify what are the actual problems on the ground. And I think it's more cultural. It's more societal level. It's not really institutional. So the response to the PTPTN challenge, yes, institutional reform needs to be done, but we need to cater to all the other non-institutional issues as well. So otherwise, the institutional changes will be rejected.
Fascinating insights there. Let's continue this conversation right here on Consider This. So make sure you stay tuned. We'll be right back in a couple of minutes. Welcome back to Consider This. Melissa and Sharad talking to Wan Saiful Wan Jan Bersatu, Supreme Council member. Sharad, you had a question for
Wan. Let's look at the kind of a topic that often reaches people in terms of the coffee shop talk, right? Which is, you know, Mahathir's had now coming up to 2 years at the helm and all these problems we see. And the question is whether he's responsible for those problems. And people are suggesting Anwar Ibrahim should take over, and there's some, you know, the succession talk that the shift in leadership will change the tone of government, will improve messaging and so on and so forth, because Anwar is much more steeped in the politics of Pakatan and its, you know, in its early successes. What do you think?
Well, you mean the transition from Mahathir to Anwar? Well, that's a promise that Tun Mahathir has made as Prime Minister, and he keeps saying that. And I think when it comes, it will come.
But is that good enough for a lot of people? Because the idea...
It's not good enough. For a lot of people, it's not good enough. And that is exactly the problem. When are we going to stop playing all this politics? We are in government now. We should govern. We should show that we can serve the population who voted for us.
Let's put it this way. Should Anwar be in cabinet? Wouldn't that be a stronger combination and solve this problem of succession?
Well, he doesn't want to. He keeps saying that he doesn't want it. So all those people around everybody should just stop all this internal bickering and focus on serving the public. There are so many problems that we need to solve. Mm. And if we don't move away from all these internal debates about who gets into what position, we will never be able to lead coherently as a government. I always try to avoid getting into this kind of debate, because I think it's a waste of time. When the time comes, it will come. If it doesn't come, it doesn't come.
Okay.
But we need to lead this country.
I think in this past 18 months or so, that leadership has been very shaky in terms of governing a country. Now, there's been a lot of talk about whether Pakatan Harapan is going to be a one-term government. I'm just wondering, at what point do you think that people in government will realise that there is a real danger of this becoming true? And what do you think needs to shift for that not to happen?
Right, and it's not just a question of changing the coalition helm, that the reversal of the institutional reform, a return to the kleptocracy that Barisan Nasional exercised so well, will become a Malaysia's fate. So, you know, it's not just Pakatan, it's the country, really.
Yeah. Well, the return of that kleptocracy is not going to happen under this government, definitely. I think nobody is talking about that, and people are trying to remove those problems that we had before from this administration. But this issue of one-term government, to me, again, elections happen every 5 years. So we have a short time frame to deliver on what we can deliver. As far as I'm concerned, I'm focusing on what I can deliver now. Whether the public chooses Pakatan Harapan still in the next election or not, I think time will tell. And if we can create a solid track record of delivering what the people want, then they will choose us again. If we continue to fight the way we're fighting now, then maybe we don't deserve a second term.
And I think Malaysians have been very critical. They showed over and over again that they're willing to throw out governments, right? Mm-hmm. We've seen in Kedah, we saw it in Terengganu under Hadi and all, and so on and so forth. I want to ask you, you used to lead a think tank. You were a critical voice. You joined party politics. You've actually become quite silent on a lot of public issues. Do you regret this move? I mean, should good people, and I'm suggesting that of you, move into politics, or is it too toxic to remain there?
Well, the culture of civil society, think tank, the intellectual sphere is very different from the political realities. And I think I'm not now more grounded to what's actually happening. We can sit here in KL, discuss about what should and should not be done. When you're actually in politics, you realise what can and cannot be done. And some things take longer than others. But then again, if we have more good people joining party politics, I think the country will move towards better. Because, I'll give you myself as an example. When I'm given a task, I just want to deliver on that one. I don't really care about what's happening after that. So at PTPTN, I have 2 years to deliver. My contract ends in June. So I'm trying my best to make sure that all the ideas, all the proposals, all the solutions that I need to deliver to the minister is delivered on time. And I have done that. Even though contract ends in June, I've already done that. So I'm quite happy with where I am now. So now the political masters need to make the decision. If we can focus on delivering on the responsibilities we have been tasked with, I think the public will say, we want more of this, and we will keep you in government so that you can deliver on all the reforms.
But just again, I mean, I hate to circle back here again, but you can deliver the, you know, moon and stars to the public, but if you don't communicate that, no one is going to know what you've done even after, you know, 2 years in office, right?
This is why communication is again the key. You know, we have a lot of successes. We have a lot of successes. It's not been communicated. When I say to you just now that institutional reform is being done too fast, to me is mainly because we're not communicating to the public quickly enough what are the benefits of this institutional reform. So they are saying, yes, you're reforming the MACC, for example, but what do we get out of it? You know, you're reforming the procurement system, what do we get out of it? You're reforming this and that, what do we get out of it? And the question of what do we get is not conveyed quickly enough to them.
There is an answer to that, is there not?
There is an answer, definitely, but we're not telling the public. You know, and that's a weakness that we have. That's a weakness that we have. And unfortunately, I'm not, you know, someone who can do anything much about it. I'm trying my best to communicate on my side of things, but I'm one voice out of the many. This is a much bigger task.
Is Dr. Mahathir the sole spokesperson for the government? It feels like everything has to wait for his okay and his final say-so. Is he the only communicator?
Well, I think if we look at the situation in government now, what we see is everything depends on him, just as you said. That's a weakness that we have. We have a very strong leader, a visionary leader, who is trying his best to make sure that the vision is shared throughout the government. But other people are clinging on to him, you know, and that creates a problem in the public's mind. What happens after him? Are we going to be the same? Are we going to change? Are we going to change for the worse or for the better? That raises a lot of questions.
And I think we have to end on that note of questions. It's been such a pleasure speaking to you, Juan. Thank you so much for being on the show. That's all the time we have on Consider This Tonight. I'm Melissa Idris with Sharad Kutan signing off. We will be back with you same time tomorrow. Thank you for watching and good night.